Hello, Florida Bar members and Florida registered paralegals. This is a quick reminder from the Standing Committee on Mental Health and Wellness of Florida Lawyers that you are approved to use the Florida Lawyers Helpline, a completely free and confidential around-the-clock helpline designed to support you in managing the challenges of both your personal and professional life. By dialing 833-FL1-WELL or 833-351-9355, you can connect with mental health professionals who are ready to assist you. Take advantage of up to 5 complimentary in-person or telehealth counseling sessions annually, and remember, there's no limit to the number of calls you can make. Reach out today.
You're listening to the Florida Bar Podcast, brought to you by the Florida Bar's Practice Resource Center, Legal Fuel. Produced by the broadcast professionals of the Florida Bar.
Welcome to the Florida Bar's Legal Fuel Podcast, brought to you by the Practice Resource Center of the Florida Bar. We're so glad you're joining us. This is Christine Bilbrey. I'm the director of the Practice Resource Center and one of the hosts of the show, which is being recorded from our studio in Tallahassee, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Moore. I'm a practice management advisor at the Florida Bar and co-host of today's podcast. Our goal at the Practice Resource Center is to assist Florida attorneys with running the business side of their law practices. We focus on a different topic each month and carry the theme through our website with related tips, videos, and articles.
So succession planning is vital for any law firm, but it's about more than just retirement. It ensures business continuity through the expected transitions and the unexpected ones like incapacity, death, or disaster. And for solo and small firms, it is critical to provide uninterrupted client service while also maximizing firm value. And joining us today to discuss succession planning is Tom Linfesti, attorney and founder of the Law Practice Exchange.
In his role as the founder and CEO of the Law Practice Exchange, Tom's goal is to guide lawyers through the next chapter of their legal career, whether that's succession planning, exit planning, or strategic growth through law firm acquisition. As a respected leader in law firm sales, Tom has guided the Law Practice Exchange to be the leading marketplace and expert team specializing in aiding attorneys and law firms in buying and selling law firms through continuation, exit, and succession strategies. Its mission is to provide education and essential services to facilitate seamless law firm sales and acquisitions and lawyer transition planning.
Welcome to the show, Tom.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
So, knowing that lawyers are very busy people and succession planning often gets put off, could you start by explaining why it's so critical for law firm owners, regardless of their immediate retirement plans?
Absolutely. I think succession planning is really, when I boil it down, it comes down to practicing without fear. We talk a lot about succession planning isn't, you know, I'm going to retire tomorrow, end of the year, and so I need a succession plan now, right? Or I need a sales strategy, or, you know, what is the partnership, you know, plan? Succession planning really is to make sure what you've built is going to continue. Even if when you are unable to do so. And so really that's a, you know, aspect of you built a firm that has probably employees, serves a community, takes care of clients. It's got business value. It has, you know, other legal service value. And the goal is to see that continue when, you know, life happens, right? Which life can happen in retirement. Life can happen in, you know, health issues. Life can happen, you know, when we want it to or when we, you know, don't expect it to. And so the overall goal is succession planning is really having that plan for continuing your firm. And if you don't have it today, then you're really practicing with this unknown, this fear of what if this happens. And so our encouragement is always have a succession plan. You should really know what it is. It may evolve over time. It may change, but you should always know kind of what your sales or succession strategy is going to be.
I love that. And I want to talk a little bit about your book, which Christine and I both read. And
excellent.
Yeah, it was very good. And the book is titled Designing a Succession Plan for Your Law Practice. And so in the book, you introduce the succession readiness test. Can you tell our listeners some of the questions included in that test?
Absolutely. It really goes through a what if analysis, right? What if, this happens? Is your firm going to be okay? Is your firm, ready? Do you have information and data that's documented in? So I'll kind of give some examples. The what if are, those different life events. What if, your health is impacted and you have to step away from the firm? What if, you pass away? What if you lose a key employee? What if you lose that, key material client? Are these things kind of planned for in your continuation plan, your firm continuation plan, so that the firm can continue on if these life events happen? And then the other part of the readiness really comes down to, have you prepared your firm for that event or that transition, which really goes into, my background is an estate and tax and corporate attorney. So I tell everybody a lot of succession planning goes to contingency planning, just like estate planning. And really the worst thing you can do is, appoint somebody as the executor under your will or the trustee and give them no knowledge, give them no power, or authority to do anything. They really don't know where to turn. So succession planning isn't the readiness test, isn't really just about having data and having a mindset of what you want to happen. It's really going through the steps to prepare that data, to appoint somebody, whether it's in a disaster situation or it's in a, succession sales strategy, to give the authority and power and knowledge to somebody that they can carry on. And I'll give you just an example. We get calls quite often of, peer attorneys who have stepped in to help where an attorney has, become disabled, who has passed away, and they're stepping in trying to preserve the firm, right, to act in that role, but they don't know, all the banking. They don't have the client data. They don't have, access to anything they really need to continue to run the firm. And so they contact us, seeing how we can help sell or, quickly transition. But it's in a disaster mode then. Because even if you jotted down some passwords and some data and otherwise, you haven't gone through the full plan, which really gives knowledge to the person that you would appoint or gives knowledge and transition, elements to that. So the most complete readiness test that we really look at is it's that you have a plan, that you have appointed, you've gathered the data, and you have a transition element that will work in that what-if situation. So if that what-if situation is, an unexpected health or death event, there is something that can quickly transition over to that appointed person so they can preserve and move forward. If that readiness is more about a transition element where you're going to bring in the next generation, sell, or have a succession plan, that may involve some transition timeline on your part, but your firm should be ready to do so. So really that readiness test is, is your firm truly ready today to change hands? And if you're doing everything and all the data and knowledge is in your head, then I can just tell you, it's not ready. And so the goal is to take steps to really prepare it.
And I think this is just the best gift really to your family, because I know Christine and I have both talked to distraught spouses on the phone and they're so upset, their attorney spouse has died suddenly and they don't know what to do. So I think just having a plan in place is just an absolute necessity.
And Jamie, sorry, just to follow up on that, I think to your point, I know different states and everything else are looking at, the ethical responsibility of having an appointment. But overall, that's the situation that you deal with and we deal with is the spouses or the others that call, those that, as an act of love, either to their spouse or, to their clients, to their team, are the ones that really do go through and create this succession plan. So there can be this continuation, maybe with some disruption, but without disaster. And I really do think that's the element is it's not just about retirement. It's about making sure what you've built is going to continue on to do the good things that you're doing now, but maybe in somebody else's hands.
Yeah. And it's important. You touch on the ethical part of that. You don't want your clients' cases to fall through the cracks. And in in the state of Florida, attorneys are required to have what we call an inventory lawyer, and a lot of them don't. Unless you're a judge or a state employee, a few other situations, you need to designate someone. It doesn't mean that they necessarily will be the person. It's just like naming a guardian for your child. They're not forced to do that. They have to accept it. But I love, leave some instructions so that it isn't a disaster for your client and your family. So important. I want to talk about something that I was so pleased that you included in the book, because I think it may be the big impediment that typically doesn't get discussed. Because for many lawyers, practicing law is a huge part of their personal identity. Can you talk about the importance of creating a clear, specific end goal and thinking about your life after the law, to see, are you emotionally ready to retire or transition to a reduced role at your firm?
Absolutely. It's one of those things, coming from a transactional lawyer background. I'm an attorney CPA. So going in 2013, when I, founded the Law Practice Exchange and started helping lawyers, I'll have to admit, I was pretty transaction motivated, meaning, this emotional aspect of being a lawyer, identifying as a lawyer, hey, counselor, as I walk down the street, those different things really didn't come to mind. I focused on, finding a good, next generation partner, finding a good merger, finding a good buyer. And it snuck up on me. And my co-author in the book, Camille Stell, is one too, that brought it, this is such a key part for lawyers. And I think lawyers probably of a certain generation, I think it's changing a bit, but overall lawyers, we've worked really hard to get the legacy, to earn and achieve the legacy that we've built. We're proud of being a lawyer. And that can mean different things based on your firm or your structure or anything else. Some really like the persona they have. Some really like serving clients. Some like being in Rotary Club and being the lawyer in the club. And I think the overall aspect that it really snuck up on me was, I remember sitting at a closing table, working with this lawyer who had been a law firm owner for years, needed that succession plan, was moving it on to the next generation, and all paper signed, everything else, everybody exits, I'm there, smiles. Really, truly, we achieved everything this lawyer had wanted in their succession plan. And as everybody leaves, he just starts crying. Mm-hmm. And the emotions really came out from the aspect of he saw it as the end of being a lawyer. Now, openly, this was a internal kind of partner success. Like, he wasn't going anywhere. It was just for him, this was the framework of I'm giving this up, right? I am giving up control. I'm giving up my legacy. And I've worked with enough lawyers now over the almost 15 years to just, that is the wrong mentality. I understand the emotions, but for everything that you may give up, you're going to gain so much more. Truly, you're going to gain, the opportunity to see the legacy of the firm you've built or the practice you've built carry on, right? Those employees that have been good to you and you've been good to them, they stay employed. The clients that need to be served, they stay on. Your legacy actually lives on in succession planning. Where if you don't have succession planning and you keep practicing and something does happen in disaster, that's where that legacy really gets hurt. And I tell, clients all the time, the decision on personal retirement is personal, right? That timeline. But having a succession plan does not have to align with retirement and really going through. It doesn't mean if I start my succession plan today that I'm also retiring. It can mean that I'm going to have a succession plan and continue to practice, as I mentioned, without fear for years, until that next element of the succession comes in. But yeah, I would have to say that is one of the biggest stumbling blocks we still face today is retirement is scary. Loss of control is scary for a lot of these, smaller law firm owners and lawyers that have practices that they've been in control and, having a successor, a buyer, somebody else, they're giving up some of that control. But the overall aspect I can tell you is, as we've been through this with clients, the life after is full of so much opportunity that I think a lot of our lawyers don't envision. And I'll give a quick story on that. We just helped an attorney, again, it was an internal succession. So they had three good senior associates who are going to be the future of the firm. And this attorney, we were the third company that they had brought in to help complete this succession plan. And truly, I could tell you, they were, you know, their own worst enemy, right? They had owned the firm for 30 some years. He had, you know, been a, you know, benevolent leader, everything else, but he liked his role. He liked the fact that, you know, everybody kind of reported, he could go to lunch with people, everything else. And at the end of the day, there were so many points along there where the fear of this, you know, losing this identity as a law firm owner, as a lawyer, anything else, tried to sabotage the deal. And we pushed through. And at the end of it, I got one of the best notes that I've received, which is, hey, Tom, just wanted to let you know, openly, you talked about it. I didn't realize it. I didn't want to admit it. But when I was going to sign those papers in my office, all of that came, all the emotion of what am I going to do next, right? This is what I want, but what am I going to do next? What am I going to be? You know, where am I going to spend time? And they said, but I, you know, I signed, I pushed through. And they said, literally 5 minutes later, I get a text from my daughter that we're expecting our first grandkid.
Oh.
he said it was almost just this perfect, you know, kind of, what am I going to do, right? What am I going to do with my time? And then it's, oh, I have this opportunity. And so many lawyers we've worked with have missed out on a lot of their own kids' lives because they've worked so hard. Spending time with grandkids is very important. So for him, he started to see opportunities, not just grandkids. He'll still practice. He'll still be affiliated, everything else. There's lots to do afterwards. But I definitely, it's a huge emotional block. And attorneys try to sabotage or stop succession planning because of that fear.
And we get calls from ones that have put it off too long. You know, the law is very, we have a lot of practitioners in their 90s because it is one of those professions that, you know, if you're still have all your faculties, you can keep working, and they do. But the problem when they call us is that they didn't make any preparation, to the point where one of the saddest calls I ever got was a man in his 90s who his firm had declined so much that he really didn't have clients, but he hadn't put any money into a 401k or retirement, and he didn't want to tell his family, so he was continuing to go to his office every day and just be there. And I was like, you know, what do you do at that point? Do you have, do you get calls from people that have put it off, and are you able to still help them out?
Yeah, I think we get those calls too often, mm-hmm. like you do as well. And that's where really we talk about, it's not timing it, right? It's not, should I start this 3 years or 5 years? If you have a practice that's your responsibility or a law firm, you should have a succession plan. Like, we encourage large firms to have succession plans for all of their partners that manage relationships, right? Have all this. But the overall is, you know, the retirement piece is a big element. And, you know, again, when I look at what we're doing here, talking about this, it's so important because I'm a student of other professions too. And being a CPA as well as an attorney, you know, education helps, right? So getting ahead and saying, hey, part of this is retirement planning, meaning financial planning, right? Wealth planning, everything else to do that. But when we get those calls, it is hard. We try everything. We built this, you know, marketplace to provide more options for matching, you know, law firm owners with potential buyers, with successors, you know, to try to expedite, right, finding the right fit overall. And so we give it, you know, everything we have as far as tools in our, you know, tool bag. But overall, it is hard, right? Finding the right successor in the law firm marketplace right now takes time. And if your practice is a smaller practice, a rural community, a very niche practice, those different things, it can take longer. And so just like you, we receive those calls from, you know, 90 plus year olds who are sometimes just calling to get information, mm-hmm. right? Don't want to start anything yet, right? They you know, I hope it all works out for them. But the overall aspect is you really can't time you know, those what if events. And so that is the overall goal of, if right now, if you are slowing down based on energy into the practice, we get this all the time. You know, people come to us and say, oh, well, you know, I mean, the financials have gone down, but I only work 4 days a week now. So you can really just tell any buyer, it, you know, you just have to work 5 days a week and the revenues pick up. But really, really what you've done is you've created a, you know, situation where, you know, the practice, probably the buyer can't get a loan because the revenues and the financials are declining. You know, buyers are scared by revenues that are declining, right? Successors are worried they'll continue to decline. And so it's, if you run out of energy, right, or you're starting to get to that point, that's really when you need to accelerate your succession and make it a full focus. I tell everybody, you know, looking for the right successor, if you're a small practitioner or anything else, looking for the right successor, waiting too long is a liability. Giving yourself more time is an asset. Really, you don't have to say yes to a deal, right? You don't have to, you know, choose the first one that comes along. But the overall goal is to give yourself time, because that is the biggest asset. When you get to those calls that you and we receive, it's sad because the options are very limited. And our success rate openly on finding buyers in that, you know, role are pretty low.
Excellent point. One thing I want to throw out there, I'm in my 50s, so I have a few years till retirement, but this cool article popped up in my inbox a few months ago. It was an ABA journal article by Douglas Malin called How to Avoid Boredom in Retirement. And he had such a positive spin on it that I got a tiny little bound notebook and I started writing down, if I was retired, how could I fill the day? What would be a long-term thing I want to do? What takes some pre-planning? You know, what could I do on a weekend? And I encourage people, I'm going to have Jamie put the link to that article on the bottom of the podcast. But so it's become a fun thing. It wasn't like an assignment, like you must have this many things, but it just was, you know, so you find yourself, even now, I find myself with a few open days and I open it up and I've jotted down very specific things, not vague like travel. It's got to be very specific, but you just break them apart into how much time you want to fill. And it's been a fun exercise. I carry it around. So I would check that out so that you can start visualizing your life after your life in law.
Yeah. And to that point, Christine, I don't know if the article mentions this book, great book, Younger Next Year. It is a great book that really goes through that plan. If you get to a point where you're a lawyer and you're working, you know, 100 miles an hour, 6 days a week, going to a retirement where you don't have anything, you're going to be miserable. Right? Your health and your mental health, your physical and mental health will deteriorate. And so one of the core principles of this book is attack those opportunities, that list that you went and made, you know, have that, but have a full calendar of the things you want to do. And if you want to stay active in law, there's tons of ways to stay active in law. There's so much need for senior experts, you know, in your field to be there. But also, if your goal is to spend time with grandkids, to your point, don't just put spend time with grandkids. Be like, I'm going to, you know, pick them up from school on these days. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take them on, you know, this specific trip in October on their fall break. Have your plan. And that's worth so many lawyers. We are used to having a full calendar, driven. And so having that, but filled with things that you enjoy and you want to do, also makes that fear of retirement less. And so I think you brought up a great point, and it's tremendous if you can go through that exercise now. We talk about this too. Once you go through and you find out the value for your firm, hopefully it changes your mindset a little bit from loss to gain. If you're focusing on succession and sale, you know, there's something to be achieved through, you know, creating a sale or succession. You get time, you get freedom, you get to do things you want to do, and you've monetized the value maybe you've built for your practice and other things. So I think that's a great recommendation that you made, and everybody should start making that list today, because it helps encourage, motivate, and just, you know, ease the emotions a little bit.
I love that you said fill your calendar, because I think that's the scary part, is that I hadn't even thought about that. Like a lawyer, if everything is mapped out and then you're facing a blank calendar. So I think that's perfect. I'm going to start doing that. I'm taking your tip for that one too, because I think psychologically having something to look forward to, you've got to have something on there that's fun that's coming up. So just whether you're retiring or not. So thank you.
Absolutely.
And Tom, this just while you've been speaking, it's made me think of our younger attorneys. So, I mean, we're talking about those that maybe are closer to retirement, maybe they have grandchildren or they will soon. But what about those folks that they're fresh out of law school, starting their own practice? And I have actually brought up succession planning to members that I've talked to on the phone that are younger. Is there an age that it's, you know, maybe start at this age, or is it never too young? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I really think it's never too young to have a plan. You know, what is that succession plan? It's really nice as we work with, you know, multiple generations, right, through law firm owners and lawyers, you know, just to see the different approach. One of the happiest deals I was is to, you know, help with a sale for a law firm for a 32-year-old. And they had built a great practice. They had become a mom of two, and priorities changed. Mm-hmm. And as priorities changed, they felt like they couldn't do everything. And so the goal was to, could we find a good succession strategy for the firm so they could, you know, monetize some of that value, but overall go and do what they wanted to. It doesn't mean they were going to do that forever. They may do some consulting, everything else, but to do that. But I will tell you, she had really built, you know, the firm with really an exit model in mind, right? Like getting to a point where, you know, they weren't the lawyer in the trenches. All the data was really run and shared collectively through the team. There was more systems, right? They had delegated to other people and to those systems. So they had built a good transition-ready law firm. But those are the parts, again, you don't know what life's going to throw at you. So to always be building with some kind of succession plan or an exit strategy. Disaster can happen. You always need to have that disaster piece of the succession plan, you know, like an appointed, you know, attorney to take over. But the other part is building with that is, I think, for, you know, just giving lawyers choices, right? She came to a point where her choices were, do I want to be home, you know, with the kids and spend that time, or do I want to keep running, or can I do both successfully? And ultimately, she determined that, you know, she couldn't do both as successfully as she wanted. And so that was her personal choice, but having an option, right? And being able to accomplish that for a younger attorney was great. So what I would say is for younger attorneys, there's huge opportunities. If you're building a practice, build it with a succession plan in mind today. Know what your exit strategy is going to be. Know what that succession plan looks like today. It may evolve as you go forward. You know, build it with that readiness for transition in mind. And then the other part is where we deal with a lot of younger attorneys is if you're growing and everything else, consider that next, that, you know, senior generation as being their successors. We need more good, you know, successors to come into play to take over other good practices and to be good stewards of those legacies. So I think for, you know, the younger generation, it's build yours the right way, but also look at being a, you know, a steward of the legacy for those ahead. There's huge financial and other benefits to doing so, but also I think it's good for the profession, right? To have those good law firm operators otherwise, to be good stewards of the previous generation and continue to do and build and, you know, go forward.
Very good. Well, another common question we get in our department, and a lot of the times we end up transferring this call to our ethics hotline so they can discuss it, but it's becoming of counsel, because that seems like a good option. Like you were speaking earlier about, you know, if someone is thinking about retiring, but they don't want to leave everything, you know, behind, they still want to stay involved. Of counsel seems like a good option. So, you know, what are your thoughts on this? Is this a common thing that people choose? And is this arrangement, you know, successful, or are there some drawbacks or things that just don't quite work out with that?
We love of counsel. as far as an opportunity for, you know, succession, for exit otherwise, it's required really in some, you know, areas. If you're, if you've got a specific expertise and you've really created a boutique firm or anything else, finding another attorney that wants to come in, you know, take over that small firm that has the similar expertise, or that you have the timeline to really train and mentor them, you know, to become that expert like you are, sometimes tough. But there are, you know, firms out there that have that expertise, right? Or have a, you know, team across the board that can do that. And so when you have those situations that either because, you know, your timeline's shorter, there's a certain, you know, niche or expertise or just other opportunities to be able to easily associate, you know, with a firm and become of counsel, continue to practice, but really have a built-in succession team there, hopefully with the right firm of, you know, other attorneys and support team and everything else that understand your practice area. And you can just kind of decide how much work you want to continue to do, or as you want to slow down, you're able to, you know, share that workload with them, you know, figure out the financial structure on what that looks like. And we just love it. I mean, there's firms that have really grown through acquisition of counsel relationships. So they've built a great model. They look to, you know, be a succession plan. And so you come over as of counsel. They're great to support, give you the transition support and timeline that you need. And I just think it's a wonderful and probably one of the easiest transactions. The financials can work out the same as a succession, a sale, you know, everything else. But at the end of the day, it's one of those that I would say people do discount it a lot of times, like, oh, of counsel, it's not a, it's not a succession. It absolutely is. And it's maybe one of the best opportunities, specifically for a lot of practice areas, or like I said, you know, specific expertise, niche practices, otherwise.
I'm curious, when you have like a senior partner who's decided he's transitioned the firm, he or she, and now they're of counsel, have you had situations where they didn't understand that they weren't senior partner anymore, that we're still trying to, like, maybe didn't know to stay in their lane?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, the biggest thing, as we talked about, you know, attorneys, you know, and as one, you know, we can admit this, it's we like control, right? And we're used to telling clients, you know, how to do things or anything else. And when you become a leader in your firm, you know, you're looked to for that, right? And so overall, when that does switch, it is hard to sometimes take a step back. I mean, I'll admit that for my own practice. When I transitioned out, you know, out of my own practice, it was still, well, you know, you guys are in charge now, but let me tell you how we need to do this, right? And it's very hard because, you know, we can give doctors a hard time about, like, they always have the right answer, but I think lawyers are somewhat similar. Like, we always have the answer because we're used to being charged with, you know, that for our clients. For our firm, I think the biggest thing that I talk about to bridge that gap is really, you know, weekly transition meetings. And what I mean by that is if you go from senior partner to of counsel, there should be some kind of transition reoccurring focus, right? To really have the senior partner be able to voice a little bit of these concerns and the junior partners or others that are on the transition committee to say, absolutely, but not have those come up in the partners, you know, all partners meeting or anything else. And so I love it, you know, when you have physical closeness, you know, a weekly lunch, hey, to senior partner, how's it going, right? Are there any issues that you're seeing, you know, everything else, like give them the voice as they go through, and then to have that communication, the focus on really what is the transition plan, just for me helps open up communication, alleviate a lot of those things. Doesn't mean that as a senior partner go of counsel, you now are going to agree with everything the new, you know, the partners do, you're going to disagree, right? But overall, you at least get to voice, discuss through that in a transition-based, you know, open communication platform.
Good compromise. I like that.
Well, I want to talk about just how succession planning can affect, you know, the valuation of a law firm. So we want to get to the good stuff of what everyone's like thinking. How can I value my law firm? So what is like the rule of thumb? And I'm using, you know, my air quotes again here, that is used to calculate a potential sale price?
Yeah, basic rule of thumb is if you want to look at gross revenues, right? The legal fees that you bring in or earn for your practice or for your firm, it's somewhere between, 0.5 to maybe 0.9 of that number, right? So if we're talking about a million, revenues firm, you're talking about 500,000 to 900,000. Truly, though, how most valuations are determined and how most deals are structured is based on net earnings, meaning not the salary purely that you take and not the profits purely that you take, but really, adjusting those down to, you have to pay yourself. If you're a practice and attorney in your firm doing work, you have to take and account for a salary or what we would call a replacement salary for you, right? Because you would have to be replaced as you transition or exit out over time. But really, what is the true owner's benefit? What is the benefit that you receive of being an owner of this firm? And that is really, if that can all be transitioned, there may be some things that cannot be transitioned. There may be a loss of a client, a loss of a certain practice area because, the new successor isn't going to do that practice area. You're an expert. They're not an expert. So you lose expert witness fees, those different things. But at the end of the day, what you're really looking at that net earnings, right? You can think of it as profit. Otherwise, that's kind of adjusted. We're usually in a 2 to 3 range, right? So on that $1 million practice, let's just say our true net earnings is something like $250,000, right? And so if you're 2 to 3 range, right, you're talking about that $250,000 maybe, 500, right, on a 2 multiple. And it could be up to that, 750, because that's really what a successor or a buyer would walk into, is they would walk in the opportunity to receive that owner's benefit, to receive that, adjusted profit that you have been building and benefiting from. So the benchmark, like you want a quick benchmark, take your gross revenues, 0.5 to 1, but that usually leaves you a wide array. And the other problem is when we just use gross revenues, you run into practices that aren't profitable. That they don't have the margins really built in that can even sometimes accomplish a good succession plan. Or they've been losing money for years and, they want a succession plan because they're trying to find a merger or otherwise to help them out of this situation. So that's really where we go down to true owner benefit. And looking at that 2 to 3 range, larger firms are going to break past that 3 model. Most firms probably land at about 2.5 to 2.75 if they're good, healthy, everyday law firms.
Very helpful.
Right. And because, all firms just may not have a lot of value. I think if you haven't saved, separately in a 401k or something like that, and you're just banking on your law firm, that's very risky. What would you agree with that?
Absolutely. One of the, we tell everybody succession planning, sale planning, just exit strategy all starts with a valuation of your firm. You have to know the value of what you've built, because then to your point, Jamie, you can really then game plan for, okay, this is the value I have. I need to increase my value, right? I need to work over the next few years to increase the value so I can get the exit price I need. Or, this is the value. I have enough retirement funds coupled with that. Everything's good to proceed. I can really meet those, exit financial needs that I need to meet. A lot of the, I think the surprise that we go through with owners when we do law firm valuations is not just about, the salary they pay themselves or the profit checks they get. It's also what benefits the firm provides to them, right? Health insurance for them, for their family, right? Travel, all these other things that can really be part of it. And so that you do not want to be a, an exit strategy surprise. You also don't want it to be a retirement surprise. And so I think, going through and understanding the value of the firm that you've built and how that would potentially transact, what the timeline would be to find a good buyer or successor for that is just that key first step. It's knowledge is power, right? Just like if we were going to list our house on the market, you wouldn't just guess at it. You would really try to go and get an opinion. Zillow's helped us on that and other, you know, different forums. But the overall is to know what you're working with before you really start that planning.
That's a perfect analogy. My next question. So if you're selling your house, you spruce it up and you make the necessary repairs. What should a firm owner be doing to get the firm looking its best and to bring the best price from a buyer?
I think a lot of it comes down to don't worry about overhaul. If you've built a firm that, you know, is doing well and you've built it based on what works for you in your space, overall, there's always, you know, improvements. If you've got tons of hard files and, you know, they're sitting around or they're in a basement or anything else, going through a scanning exercise or a disposal exercise or anything else would be hugely beneficial to you to be transition ready, and to a buyer who comes in who really doesn't want to deal with offsite storage of three storage lockers with hard files going back 20 years, right? So overall, some of those improvements. But when you get to a firm, I always tell everybody, it really comes down to three components for valuation. One's financials. We already kind of talked about that. You know, it could be the revenues, the net profit. It could be the, you know, the cases that you're seeing through and everything else. The other is your brand, right? Truly the brand for your firm, which you may have a personal brand kind of intermingled in there, but how strong is that brand, right? Is your website good? Is it clean, right? Is your marketing solid? Everything else from that side, you know, what is that brand known to your referral sources, to your clients, to your community, to your industry, otherwise? And if there's some improvements, some housekeeping, as you mentioned, to kind of get that in the right situation, you know, work on that. One of the things we run into a lot is we have, you know, small practitioners sometimes that have every practice area possible listed on their website. And when they come in, you know, they're like, oh, well, this is for marketing purposes, to bring in leads, whatever else. Well, what do you do? Well, I do, you know, estate planning. Well, why do you have, you know, DWI? Why do you have this? And they're like, well, I used to do that. I don't take those anymore. Well, get rid of it. Because that just really creates brand confusion. You know, if you start talking to a successor or a buyer, they're going to come in and say, well, I don't do GWIs. I'm looking to buy an estate planning practice. So really go to your strength, focus in on what that brand is. And the third piece that I think is the biggest thing that lawyers can do and really loops us back to that transition readiness is systems. You know, there's a great book, I'm sure you probably talked about it or read it, you know, called Traction. And I think Traction is a great book for lawyers and law firm operators and law firm partners to really read and review. But one of the core concepts is delegate to elevate. And for lawyers, even if you're in a small firm with, you know, one, you know, support, you know, team member, one paralegal, you know, maybe you have a junior associate, otherwise, start looking at ways that you can delegate what you do to a system or to a person, right? Because that really helps us with transition readiness, right? It's going to have a firm that can continue on without you. But when a buyer or a successor comes in, they see a firm that's easier to take over, right? That's more valuable because the transition risk is less. It's not about you having to stay on for 2 years to teach them everything that's in your head about when to run payroll and, you know, how does this really go out and everything else. You've documented some of it, right? You've got a team that knows what they're doing. You've maybe created a little checklist system for this. And so as much as you can, what I would tell you is delegation of your daily responsibilities just creates more value, creates a more transition ready firm, and really creates overall more buyer and successor options because they're less fearful of that firm that has a documented system, right? Has a strong brand and has strong financials than they would be if some of those components are missing.
And all of that, huge. Can you also, because I know in the book you bring it up, what about technology and case management? Older attorneys maybe have been averse to, you know, going all in with technology. Does that affect the sale price? If you have physical files all over the place, what do you tell those people?
Very hard to sell your practice, openly. A lot of the attorneys over the years have said, oh, we have a gold mine. I just tell buyers, I have files going back 30 years. I have, you know, three offsite storage. Our basement and attic is full here, right? And you just tell them, I mean, it is a gold mine. Well, do you have any of that in a, you know, practice management or a CRM database? Do you use that? No. But, you know, somebody goes through that and man, they would just do it. But, you know, a 30 year ago will client, right? I mean, you know, they might pass away and come back and everything else. But the value of that you don't have them in your system versus if you took those 30 years and you had them in a database and you said, I have 30,000, you know, contacts, right, in this database that we send a monthly, you know, check into, right? Or otherwise, a buyer gets very excited about that opportunity. They do not get excited about taking over three storage, you know, containers and a basement and an attic. They don't want that. And it really has become a divisive deal point in some that who's going to deal with that mess, meaning buyer does not want it. And seller really at the point in their career or otherwise doesn't really want to go through and hire somebody or go through the scanning and the, you know, disposal process, but you have to. So what I would say is having, you know, just the contacts in the system. The other is buyers are looking for good data. And if you, you know, keep your financials on a spreadsheet that is updated sometimes, right? Or you're what I call, you know, tax year accounting, which is basically I take money out of my bank account when there's money in there. And at the end of the year, my accountant lets me know how much I owe in taxes, but I have no idea how much I made month to month. It's a very tough practice for buyers to understand, right? To get behind because you don't have the data that they're looking for. Another example of that is one of the questions that buyers are going to want to know. One of the first questions are, where do your clients come from? Where do your clients come from? And so many of our practitioners, you know, smaller practitioners, solos have said, I don't know. Like they just, after 40 years in practice, they just keep coming. I got more work than I know what to do with, but you know, they come from here, they come from there. I don't really track that. And that's really hard for a buyer to see, well, then how did they become mine, right? If, you know, Joe and Susan are two of your sources that you know you get work from, you just don't know how much, how do I know Joe and Susan, you know, are going to like me as a successor, right? That's the buyer fear. That's the buyer risk in doing that. So we've really encouraged, and I think this is the point of, you know, taking steps, right? If you're a few years away, you're trying to get transition ready, yes, you need to go through the scanning, get into a CRM, a practice management system. It does not have to be complex, but it should be something. And when you get to a point like, you know, with financials and data about where do clients come from? I mean, we have clients that enter the market looking for their successor and have no idea. Our encouragement is, well, then start today. For the next 3 to 6 months, you know, your reception, you know, paralegal or you are intaking and saying, oh, thanks for calling. How'd you hear about us? And you're writing that down and tracking because then at least you have a sample, a data set to let a buyer know, hey, I've been tracking this for the last 6 months. Joe sent me 10 clients. You need to meet Joe and we need to make sure that Joe is going to love you as part of the transition plan, everything else. And so I think that's the important piece is you don't have to overkill. It's not the huge hauls or lifts to be ready, but you know, certain improvements are really going to be necessary to you know, find that right succession or sale.
That's a great tip that your marketing research can be as simple as adding one question to your intake. So I love that. But because I've been at the bar for 10 years and I've gotten this call hundreds of times, when you go to that warehouse or the person who unfortunately inherited your mess and the files from the last hurricane are completely full of black mold, or your files were stolen. We've had calls where tons of legal files have been thrown in a dumpster. That is a gigantic liability. You're not protecting your client's information. Keeping files, hard files, or electronic files, if you get hacked, you really have to think about a file destruction policy. So because we're the Practice Resource Center, I've got to throw that in.
Yes, I was cringing when you were talking about I can't handle all of that stuff. that's an excellent tip. So if we have, let's say we have some listeners right now, they're thinking, okay, I'm organized. I have all of my books in order, but I'm not really sure how to find a buyer. What role does a broker play in that process? And how can a broker help connect them with a potential buyer?
Absolutely. It's part of the reason I really started the Law Practice Exchange. When I was in practice, I was helping a lot of other professional business owners like CPAs, dentists, doctors, wealth advisors, everything else with their exit and succession. And what became apparent is you don't always have the internal option, right? That you may have a good senior associate. They just may not be they may not desire to be the next owner, right? They're happy in the employment seat otherwise, or they don't have the skill set. The timeline's not there to do that. So having a marketplace option, right, to really go and find potentially the right successor, the right buyer, but in the market is just to give additional options. And I think that's where, brokerage comes into play, is to confidentially provide you more options, right, than you would be able to generate on your own. I mean, that's truly, at the baseline, they can hopefully, which is what we do, help you on value, go through these different exercises on deal structuring, all of these things. But at the end, when you're looking for that successor, I think that's the opportunity, is that confidential placement. Over the years, we've gone through and, our big move was, last year in 2024, we launched the marketplace, housed at themarketplace.law or, at our site, the Law Practice Exchange. And really, it is meant to just be that confidential search and match, is to allow somebody who's looking for a sale or succession to enter, a marketplace, a tech-enabled marketplace, sign confidentiality agreements, right? Provide some information, create a confidential listing, and be matched with buyers that are under the same confidentiality, right? Looking for, succession opportunities to be the successor or to be the buyer and really go through that. Because this marketplace for lawyers is still young, and we need more options for those that come in and say, hey, I've got a great practice, but, I need this type of successor, this type of buyer. And that may take some time because we haven't reached the establishment of some of those other marketplaces like dental otherwise. But that's really, I think, where they've been successful, is a quick opportunity to pair and get interest from successors and move conversations forward. And so that's really what we're working with, is to advance that model. But I do think, we're really more of an advisory model today. Brokerage is, where we were, but the advisory is to help find matches and then advise really both parties. Because typically you have, a lawyer or a law firm on one side that they don't have a broker. They don't have a key advisor that's been through a law firm, transition before. And so our overall team is really focused on being, that advisor to the structure to help make a true win-win, succession or sale buy strategy. And I think it's very important to continue to produce, more options, give yourself time, but the more options you have in a confidential space, you get to choose them. Right. If you're a seller looking at succession, you get to choose the best fit, because I've seen repeatedly over the years that fit typically matters more than financials and getting a deal done. Right. So that means like finding the right successor, not that's going to pay you the highest check, but actually is the best fit, meaning they understand your practice area, you really like them, you have same, kind of client values, other aspects, community focus. These different things tend to get the deals done at motivation, even when somebody else comes and says, I'll offer X, but there's not the fit. And so finding options that are going to give you that right match with the right fit is key.
That's great. So it's successful for both parties. I have read other books on succession planning that were very dry, and I really recommend your book because I read it in one day because it was so entertaining. You give some real life scenarios, and I really liked that you even include some conversation starters to discuss your retirement with your associates to gauge their interest in taking over the firm. One of the examples you gave was an older attorney who had two associates, and he just kind of sprung it on them, and they both quickly bailed because for whatever their personal reasons were. But I think a lot of associates assume they can't afford to take over the firm. They're young. They don't. Can you talk a little bit about the conversation starters, but then also what are some of the ownership transfer options, whether it is an outside buyer, a partner, or your associates?
So conversation starters, one is, you know, start as early as possible and continue the effort. What I mean is we've seen repeatedly those that have said, oh yeah, I've talked to them. They're on board. When did you have that conversation? 8 years ago, right? Well, they may not be on board now. And, you know, overall, it's just the concept of, are you going to ask for them to, you know, buy at a significant price, right? All of those different things. But really, I mean, I remember the first program that we did on, you know, selling and succession planning. We had a panel on, you know, how to, you know, recruit your buyer, your successor, and a lot of feedback of, I've hired associates before, they've left, right? Mm-hmm. Everything else, they become my competitor. And I think really the mindset shift is, if you're looking at succession planning, and let's just say you've got a longer runway and you want to hire, you're not hiring an associate, you're hiring your buyer. And so the conversation at those interviews should really be focused on, I'm looking for somebody that's going to come in and be part of the succession of this firm. Is that something that interests you, right? And whether they've been there, you know, not a day and you're just an interview stage, or they've been there a year, it's the same conversation. And if they say yes, usually their next question is, what are next steps? What does that mean? And so that's really the point of, you need to be ready to devote to that succession plan. Does not mean you have to sell any equity or bring them on as a partner tomorrow, but you need to go through an exercise of, you know, valuation, building out what that offer and that structure would be like. Maybe they come in and they've got a 5% and then you, you know, bring them into equity over time in different stages. And so the conversation starters I really like is, I was thinking about my succession plan, right? It doesn't mean I'm selling the firm. It doesn't mean I'm retiring tomorrow. I was thinking about my succession plan, and I thought, you know, it'd be a good idea to discuss that with you. And that could be to your internal, you know, senior associate, junior partner, anything else, or it could be to somebody that you just really respect, which is a peer attorney. They have their own firm or they're at another firm, and you're looking at maybe that of counsel relationship or merger relationship. Otherwise, hey, I've started thinking about the succession plan for my practice. I've always respected what you have done. I just wondered if there was any interest that we should discuss, you know, in potentially aligning on that succession plan. And, you know, what we found is, even if they're not interested or they can't, you know, get in that mindset to be that successor, it's usually a good compliment to them that you pick them as a potential, right? And to go through that. And so conversation starters, once you do it, the conversation becomes so much easier. Just be ready once you start to essentially continue, right? Because you don't want to then not talk to that associate for 5 years about what succession is. You want to get a plan in place. You want to get their buy-in and everything else. You can control timeline, how much you sell, all these different things, and you can control every contingency. But the overall is to, you know, take that motivation and really make it into a plan. And then to your second piece on structure, I kind of hit on a couple, but, you know, typically we see, you know, internal sale as a desired first option. If you have an associate or associates, there's always that, you know, if they are interested and if they have the, you know, capabilities, the business acumen, the legal acumen, everything else, with your help and mentorship, that they could be the next owner. The goal is to do a partnership, right? Go from, if you're a solo owner, to they come in as a partnership, maybe you gradually, you know, transition. But if you're looking outside your firm, which most end up doing, you know, in one way or the other, then you're looking at of counsel We already talked about that. It's a great structure to find a firm that's already in existence. You really are taking your brand over there and associating your personal brand or your firm brand with theirs and transitioning it over time. And a merger is the same concept, right? You're merging with another firm. You're going to create maybe a partnership where there wasn't one and kind of continue that forward. And then the other pieces really are, you know, true sale. It really goes more to a business sale, a sale of the value that you've built and goodwill and, you know, the firm systems, everything else that's really transacted under an asset purchase or an equity purchase, which really is kind of what Rule 1.17 kind of envisions, right? Is, you know, here's this true sale structure and everything else for that. And we see that used probably most, you know, out of most parties that are looking, you know, and make a match in the marketplace. That seems to make the most sense for a lot of them.
Very good. I want to go back to your book because I loved it. And one of the things that I really like about your book is the documents that you have in the appendix section. They're excellent. Could you maybe share with our listeners just like one of the form or a couple of the forms that are in the appendix section that could assist lawyers in creating a succession plan?
Yeah, I think overall, when you look at those and go through everything, the key part is, you know, attack it as a plan, right? So as we go through things, like we talked about the transition readiness, right? And going through that different structure. The other part is really going through, you know, the overall data build, right? For financials, everything else, preparing for valuation, going through those different aspects that you can really build out and gather those, you know, resources, right? Gather the resources that you're going to need as part of a succession plan, as part of, you know, getting a deal structure done, or essentially going through and, you know, kind of that life after law, right? What does that look like? And one of the biggest things that we've kind of touched on is transition plan. And one of the resources in there is really looking at, you know, developing what a transition plan looks like. We talk all the time, if you want to talk sale or succession plan, it is not about throwing the keys to somebody and walking the way. These are really baton pass transactions, right? Meaning it's going to happen over time if you really want to preserve, you know, referral, client relationships, you know, community awareness, everything else. And so the overall aspect is, what does that plan look like? What needs to be transitioned? What is your role responsibility? What is your personal relationships that drive, you know, firm, you know, intake and revenues? And documenting that and going through that exercise with a successor or a buyer to really know what needs to happen. When deals fail in our world, it is because the parties did not focus on the transition plan. It's not because the financials weren't right or potentially the deal structure or even that they weren't the right parties to do the deal. It's usually because you get one party that says, I've got this, don't worry about it, I know exactly what to do. And they haven't really communicated with, you know, if that's the buyer, they haven't communicated with the seller on how to successfully transition. What is it that you've built and what is it that you have and how do we make sure that we continue doing this, right? Not to disrupt, but really to continue doing the good things that you have been doing, right? And overall, I didn't know, Jamie, is there specific ones there that, you know, you had, you know, that stood out to you or otherwise, but that's really where we go is the transition plan exercise is probably one of the most important.
Super helpful. Thank you.
This has all been really helpful. Tom, do you have any final advice that you would give to lawyers who are hesitant or unsure about starting the succession planning process?
Absolutely. All I would say is take the first step. Right. It can be scary. It can, you know, seem like, you know, that loss of identity is going to happen as soon as I make that first step, whether it's to reach out to, you know, to you guys to help, whether it's to reach out to somebody like us at the Law Practice Exchange, or what we really say is that next step could just be talking to your significant other, your spouse, or a peer attorney about, hey, I'm thinking about, right, doing this, my succession plan. What do you think? Once you take just that one first baby step, it does get easier. It truly does. Once you start kind of talking about it and you commit to it, right? And then the goal is, of course, take the next one. And then, you know, keep walking down a path. The biggest thing that we see is attorneys like to have all the answers and know the final outcome. And I would tell you succession planning is an area that, you know, when you start, you may not know exactly who your buyer is going to be. You may not know, is it going to be an of counsel? Is it going to be a merger? Is it going to be an asset sale? But what you do know is what your goals are. I want to continue to practice for, you know, this many years. So, okay, that might be a merger of counsel relationship. You know that your goals are, you know, client preservation, team preservation. Okay, well, let's look at firms that really value that and go through it. And once you know your goals, that should be your motivation to keep walking down the path. It shouldn't be scary that the, you know, end is unknown because you control it. Ultimately, if you are a lawyer who owns a practice, a law firm, otherwise, and you start down a path, you control how it's going to look. However, as we talked about, if you wait, you lose that control. You truly lose that control if you don't take that first step and you don't keep walking, right? Life is going to happen. Those what if events will happen, and you'll be sitting, you know, at your chair, you know, at your desk, like you are today, and maybe 5 years from now, you're in that same position without a succession plan. And so your options become limited. Your legacy is now at threat. And so those different things, all I would encourage is take the first step, keep walking, get good resource, which is so great that, you know, we're talking about this and, you know, why we put the book out, why we put other resources out. Learn about it, but get good guidance and feel that you've brought people that can support you through this process. And once you do that, you'd be amazed how easy it becomes. Truly, like the fears kind of go away and you get a little excited about it. You figure out the value you built for your firm. You figure out what you can do, and then it's going to check a lot of your goal boxes. And when you reach that, right, that's the beauty of succession planning, is to preserve what you built and achieve your goals in that transition. And hopefully I would encourage everybody to just take that first step.
Excellent advice. Well, it looks like we've reached the end of our program. Thank you so much, Tom Linfesti, for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Tom, if our listeners have questions, how can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. Feel free to visit us at thelawpracticeexchange.com. That's thelawpracticeexchange.com. And you can, you know, visit us there, look up, we've got a lot of resources in our learning center, everything else. Also, we offer just a 15-minute confidential call, really focused on just learning and choosing a path that may be right for you. And so just, you know, that could be your first step. So definitely visit us at thelawpracticeexchange.com. And I look forward to being a resource however we can.
Perfect. If you like what you heard today, please rate us in Apple Podcasts. Join us next time for another episode of the Florida Bar's Legal Fuel Podcast, brought to you by the Practice Resource Center of the Florida Bar. I'm Christine Bilbrey.
And I'm Jamie Moore. Until next time, thank you for listening.
If you'd like more information about today's show, please visit legalfuel.com. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to the Florida Bar's podcast via iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, and RSS. Find the Florida Bar's Practice Resource Center, Legal Fuel, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, the Florida Bar. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer.
Are you looking to grow your practice? Consider joining the Florida Bar's Lawyer Referral Service. There's never been a better time to apply because we are currently waiving the $125 annual fee, so members who qualify can join the Florida Bar LRS for free. All panel members of the Florida Bar Lawyer Referral Service must be licensed in Florida, must be members in good standing, and must carry a minimum of $100,000 in professional liability insurance to participate. Panel members must also maintain an office physically located in one of the 52 Florida counties served by the Florida Bar Lawyer Referral Service. For more information and to apply, please go to floridabar.org/LRS.